Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. And today's guest is Tom Fee from Vector Wealth Management. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Good morning.
The topic of the day is behavioral economics and the impact on decision-making. Tom, why are we talking about this today? Why is this important to business owners?
I don't know. I thought it was your idea.
Sam?
Uh-oh.
We're going to blame this on you.
All right. Well, we'll just make it up as we go. No. I think, without going way up, I would say is that from my experience in the business, now I've been an advisor as long as I've been a client. I'm 54, came into the business at 37, so I spent a lot of time as a client in that was a wonderful experience because it allowed me to come in here and really examine the business from the perspective of an outsider. And one of the things that I've been most struck by, and quite frankly, I've had our firm evolve towards, is understanding that there are certain things that are going to happen within our economic climate. Mm-hmm. Whether it's inflation, deflation, high unemployment, low employment.
It's always changing.
It's constantly changing. But it's really the only really consistent factor is behavior. How do we respond to change? And this has been something that has been recognized in the industry. I think in 2002, the Nobel Prize for Economics wasn't given to Bill Sharp for some abstract formula that helped explain market movements and with different variables. It was given for behavioral economics. What impact do we have on the economy through the way we perceive it? So it's a very important topic, not just for the financial services industry, but really for how business owners respond to different environments, or how do they react as they're going through their life and their business is maturing, and how they're making decisions around where they are today versus where they were 10 years ago. And we have to understand and acknowledge that behavioral aspect to decision making if we are going to help them as advisors make the best decisions at any time.
So we're not just looking at the macroeconomic level and those behaviors. We're looking at them within their personal lives.
Correct.
Okay, so as a business owner, you're out there spending 24/7 running your business, and you're reacting to clients and vendors and customers and doing things. And then there's these outside influences, such as the economy and Wall Street and so forth. Is there a way for a business owner to understand those things better so that they understand what their reaction is and whether or not that's correct?
I think there is, and it's almost like you have to step back a little bit and just stay within the discussions of behavioral economics as it relates to our economy, kind of get a general understanding of that, and then say, okay, well, in my business and in my life, how does this apply to me? And that's
so. Say more about what behavioral economics is then, because it sounds like we got to start from a place where we understand what that
let's get to the basics.
Well, right. Okay. Let's just go to the S&P 500, which is most are aware that it's the 500 largest companies in the United States, and it comprises about 80 to 85% of the market capitalization in America. So every other company is the last 15%. So it's a pretty important measure that's out there. And we've been measuring this since the data that we look at is from 1926. There's older data, but if we just said from 1926. And there's a a value, a return that has been generated over that period of time, that if you take every data point from today back to 1926 and you came up with the mean, it's somewhere around 10%. Well, one could, it'd be an interesting discussion to say, okay, if we eliminated anybody's emotional reactions to market environments, you know, whatever, wherever we are at, would that mean of 10% be the return of the market? If we extracted human beings from it at all, from it entirely, would we just get a 10% return year after year after year? And there, you know, that's maybe a little bit of an oversimplification, but the truth rings in is that when humans get involved in the markets, they overreact or underreact to situations constantly.
Every day,
like we do in our own businesses.
So what factors, do we know what factors cause a difference or cause us to veer away from the mean?
Yes, and I think, you know, you could really summarize it in two words: fear and greed, which we've discussed before. Okay, concrete analysis on those two human behaviors, those two human reactions, is that when the economy is not doing well, the S&P 500 trades off a multiple.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got earnings are at 50 on for all companies thrown together, earnings are at 50, and then the market is trading at a multiple of 10. So 50 times 10, theoretically, the S&P 500 would be at about 500, coincidentally. So you've got this low earnings, and you get a low multiple. When earnings get really high, like they did in around 2000, the multiple got really high, up mm-hmm. in the range of over 30. So earnings high, multiple high.
Okay.
Well, you could actually argue to say, well, you know, if earnings are so high, there's no way you're going to be able to sustain these earnings. I'm not going to pay you a high multiple. I'm going to pay you a low multiple. So you get a high earnings, you get a low multiple, which would keep us closer to that mean of 10.
Mm-hmm.
So we overreacted because we thought the earnings were going to continue to go up.
Absolutely. We wanted a piece of Microsoft.
Yeah.
Give me that. I want some of that. I'm willing to pay 38 times, even though intuitively, how are they going to sustain that level of growth? They couldn't. Microsoft, when they could no longer invest in their business to give a higher return, they started paying a dividend. That should have been a signal that Microsoft was saying the best place for our money isn't in future products, it's in distributing back to our shareholders. You would never distribute unless you couldn't do something better with the money.
Mm-hmm.
So we allow ourselves high multiple earnings, high multiples. So it's actually we're acting conversely. We should be low multiple when we've got high earnings, and we should be higher multiple when we have low earnings, because there's no way the earnings are going to stay this low. We know that you're cutting expenses, workers, internal, whatever it takes to be the drivers for higher profits.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of acting conversely, we go high, high, low, low. I think that's a great example of how behavior impacts the markets.
And that's really been significant the last 7 or 8 years until we got to September of 2008. And now all of a sudden there's a total lack of confidence in everything. And so how has that impacted the markets?
Well, I'm going to draw you back to 1982. So it's from 1982 forward, we thought that through technology and information and communication, we were able to increase productivity to the level that these growth rates were sustainable,
mm-hmm.
right? And then from about right around 2000 to present, we realized that no, that's not possible. And so as we've kind of experienced the last 7 years, we've had this, again, regression, if you will, or reversion to a mean that has impacted our wealth significantly. And now we're a little bit more, now it's not about greed right now. It's more about fear.
Fear.
And so if behavior follows normally, we will overreact now. to the circumstances that we're in.
Well, so when you were saying the earlier example where it was high multiple, high return, that was rather than being low multiple, high return, if I'm remembering this correctly, it was driven by greed.
It is. I mean,
that
whole high. Yes, and a little bit of, it's not pure greed. The greed is a driver, but it is, we thought that we now were able to drive more profits and higher values forever.
Okay.
Because we were smarter. We have more information. The technological revolution, worker productivity, it's a different world today.
So what would it look like then with the fear now? That being the behavioral driver.
Well, then what you would expect, and this is, when we come back to that mean of 10, if that's the same, maybe it's 9.5 or 9.8, but if you get back to that mean, more than likely what we're going to do is we're going to fire through the other side of it.
Okay.
Quite frankly, it's hard to get back to an appropriate value unless you go through the other side of it.
Okay.
So high expectations were exchanged for low expectations, and people pulled the money out of the market, and fear is totally in control.
Correct. And I don't mean to say that being conservative at this point is a bad decision. I actually think it's a good decision now. But we're really talking about the behavioral aspects rather than appropriate valuations in the market. I just want to be clear in this discussion.
So hitting the floor valuations and earnings, or that's artificial as well.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So, how do we move this back to the business owner? Okay. And we've got the same drivers that affect how business owners make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
What is the business owner's behavior around the assets? Is they're getting to a point of transition? If they're going to be selling their business in 5 or 7 or 10 years, do they have enough information to have them eliminate the fear or the greed around, or let's call it really fear, because we're talking about a relatively large transaction or a transition mm-hmm. in their lives. How do we control or give them enough information so that they behave well as they make these very difficult decisions?
What you're really saying for the business owner is they need to have enough information so they understand where the markets are going and aren't surprised by it, and they really need to understand themselves well enough to not overreact either on the greed side or the fear side, and try to level things out so that they can keep making progress towards retirement or whichever goals they have most in mind.
Right, right. And again, in candor, we don't want the folks listening today or our clients that we're speaking to think, hey, I'm not stupid, man, I don't live in fear, man. I've run this business. I built it from nothing. I've got all these employees. I understand my business. It's not that. It's really, it's this subtle concern about not being able to make the same level of decision making that's made them successful in their business as they make a significant change. So again, these are not people who live in fear, but yet can be impacted, or can be, their decision-making can be blocked if we don't give them enough information. So it's like a very subtle, low-level, low-grade fear.
Tom, it's been my experience that when business owners start to consider the transition from actively managing their business, and most of them really know their business well because they're successful and they've done
right.
it for 30 years.
Right.
But when you think about transitioning from that to the passive income, and now I'm an investor, and now all of my assets are out of the business and they're in something I don't understand, then they really want to know, how can I level that out? How can I make sure I don't overreact? How can I make sure that I'm not late to the game? Those kind of issues. And I think that's where fear comes, because it's fear of the unknown and something that they really haven't done before. And what educational institution teaches you how to live with money after you've accumulated money? I haven't found one yet. You're lucky enough if they can help you figure out how to make some. But now that you've got it and you're trying to talk about passing it on to future generations and protecting it and making sure it's there so that you have the advantages that can come with some assets, that's something that's foreign to most business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And there's where I think the fear plays in for business owners.
Right. And we've talked in other discussions about the pension track program that we have, and the pension track really And this is you'll hear this. This is a mantra that we have, and actually when in the office we'll say, what are we doing today to give our clients a better understanding and confidence around their financial lives? And that's what the goal is. We need the Pension Track application that we use is to accomplish that, to present information in a fashion that we get these aha moments. And when that aha moment happens, fear leaves the room.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can say, okay. You kind of level set.
Right. And say, okay, I see that this with these conservative assumptions, the drivers of the results are your assumptions. So you make sure that those assumptions are very reasonable. And, you know, what does this impact? What does the building have? What is the sale? What is a earnout? All these things that we've talked about before, when you can look up on a screen and say, all right, I see that I thought I needed X, but I only need 60% of X, or I thought I needed X and I needed 120% of X. Give me that information so that I can behave better, make better decisions as I go through this part of my life that is not where I've spent the last 30 years. Okay? I've still got to work on the business,
mm-hmm.
and I've got to work in the business. And let's give them the information. Our goal is to give them enough information so that they can work on their business effectively.
So the Pension Track dampens that radical ups and downs that an owner might experience. I'm curious, does your tool integrate the macroeconomic behaviors? I mean, does it say in those market cycles we talked about last time in last podcast, you know, if there's 3.2 or 4.4, you know, years
in the cycle,
and we're in the fear cycle, you know, does your tool model, your application model, what may be happening in the next 5-year cycle, 4-year cycle?
Well, that's an interesting question, and actually what it does. And what we will do is, let's say, for instance, if we're talking about asset staging
mm-hmm.
and behavior now,
mm-hmm.
And we can float around here to a lot of different ways where behavior is so important. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely everywhere. It's how you drive to work in the day. You know, what's your behavior there? So if we're talking about assets now, and we say that for 4 years, say to our clients, for the next 4 years, we don't have any of your market or your money that you need as an income replacement at risk in the market. So that next morning when they wake up, do they turn on CNBC or do they turn on the Golf Channel?
Right, probably the Golf Channel.
If I don't need to worry about my assets until the year 2013 for providing an income for me, then I should be doing something different than obsessing around it. So
right.
We are mitigating some of that fear, which alters behavior. It lets us take things within the context of just their circumstances.
Well, and I like this as a business owner. It's like it puts you in a different place, what you're going to control. I mean, I only can control what I can control. Like you're saying, if I watch CNBC or, you know, it doesn't matter. It becomes useless activity. I don't have time for that. But at least now I know.
Right. Exactly. And that's a huge thing is, I mean, if we all just really focused on the factors that we could control. And I like to, my wife and I have these discussions, and she says, look, the only thing we can do for our kids is model values and teach them how to be in a relationship.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you know, that's both liberating and a little scary, you know, because actually I want to control this, I want to control this, all these different factors that I can't.
Yeah.
You know, I've managed in my life, I've maybe managed 80, 90 people. I don't know that I know. In truth, I've never changed anyone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You are who you are. All we want to do is with our clients, you know, going from these large, broad discussions back to our clients, is to give them enough information for them to control how they're responding to circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the possibility of a business sale, let us give you enough information so that there isn't fear that this isn't going to be enough.
Fear takes you out of the driver's seat.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Tom, let's get back to the Pension Track and an example. If I'm a business owner and I'm selling my business and we make an assumption that we're going to have this liquidity event for X number of dollars, we plug that into the Pension Track. then can you plug in asset allocation assumptions based on age and personality and interviews and so forth? And then once you do that, can you test it against various things that might happen in the market so that they can see how that's going to affect their assets?
Yes, and I want to answer that in two parts. First, what I want to say, and then I'm going to integrate it into what you just asked. So just for a second, stay with me because I'm going to throw a whole bunch of variables at you, and my goal is to get you to cross your eyes here. Okay. I want to create, so you don't have to remember this, there's no test on it, but I want those eyes crossed
already, Tom.
Okay. So the example is there's a business value of $3 to $8 million. You want to sell it in 4 to 6 years. All the dollars currently are being reinvested in the business. You might want to stay involved for a period of time. There's real estate. They own the building personally. They're trying to help one of their kids go to graduate school, but they want to remodel a cabin, and their spouse is 4 years younger, and they're not sure about when Social Security plus that small pension she had when she was a school teacher.
I only have one question about that. What graduate school? How much does it cost?
It was Northwestern, and it was $32,468.42.
Oh, you threw me with the 42 cents. Okay, let's
okay.
go.
Well, that's okay, a lot so of now,
facts. And now, so now you've seen the competition.
Right. So now we've got this situation. Oh my gosh! I mean, there's just so many things that go into this, and how can we show that? How do we demonstrate that? And you demonstrate it by looking at each one of the variables and presenting it in a fashion where you get affirmation on each one, okay? So we're looking at this particular aspect, and these are the assumptions. Does that seem reasonable? Yes. Okay, now let's go to the next one. So you take all of these things and you bring them into a crystallization to say, okay, I am comfortable with all of the assumptions that we're making, or reduce the assumptions by 20%, whatever it is. Let's stress this even more. So then you get to some point where you can look out at the long end and say, reasonably speaking, that we're going to be able to get this thing done, okay? Let's say that even through this whole process that their wealth today is going to increase by a twofold, that if they have net worth of $3 million, they're going to have a net worth of $6 million at some point. And in that, you've got these assumptions, the return assumptions. And one of the most critical things I think we do as an investment advisory firm is to understand that our clients may have the ability to have more money at risk because they have a lot of assets. But do they have a willingness to do so? I think it is.
Give me an example.
Okay, I like the extremes. Okay, let's go to an extreme example because it makes it obvious. Someone has a $10 million net worth and they need $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that individual has the ability to invest in pork bellies. They could be all emerging markets. They could be buying real estate in New Orleans. You know, they could be doing a lot of crazy stuff because they only need $50,000 a year on that $10 million.
Okay.
Could be there.
They have the ability, but do they have the willingness? Do they want to invest in New Orleans? Do they want to invest in pork bellies? Do they want to be all in emerging markets? And so what we have to do where we serve our clients best is in ascertaining where we get the best behavior.
Okay.
I know I don't want to see my assets go down by 25%. It doesn't matter if I've got more. I just don't like it. So we need to then, and we have our ability willingness factor, where we will govern back the long end of the portfolio is where you can take on more risk. We literally govern that back as in a meeting with the client, looking at this and saying, okay, your expected rate of return may drop from a 6.6 or a 7.2 to a 6.7, but your allocation to risk has dropped dramatically. How does that feel? Okay.
Sam, I've seen this pension tract in action, and when they're having the conversation in the conference room, it's on the screen, and if he changes that assumption from 6.2 to 5, instantly, you can see how that affects all of those assets based on how they're invested in, and I think the thing that Tom says is it helps the clients see their options with some real clarity because now they're not thinking about what does that do. They can see exactly what that does,
mm-hmm.
And so you use this by way of helping do a risk assessment on your clients and to make a judgment of how much can they tolerate and how much can't they?
Right. You know, it's, I think as we get older, the cliches that are out there, it really take on meaning, you know, and you can't understand that the saying that an apple doesn't fall far from the tree until you got your 10-year-old son doing things that you do that you don't like about yourself, you know? It really, first time, you could say that 50 times, but it doesn't mean anything until you have something like that.
Until you experience it.
Until you experience it. And the story of the tortoise and the hare, okay? Mm-hmm. The hare lost the race. And the hare is maybe the one that really wanted, you know, I'm looking for a 10%. I want a 12% return. I really got to, and by understanding that you don't need that, you get better behavior. We may, in fact, be more conservative in volatile markets and then allocating more dollars to risk when the markets are down because we're not trying to get the highest return at any time. Our clients, what we want them to understand is what is necessary for them to have success, not some arbitrary selection of what my rate of return should be based on wanting more. Greed, quite frankly. Because greed, if you're greedy, you will be fearful at times because you're going to be experiencing more of that volatility than perhaps you want to.
So, Tom, if I'm getting this right, you use your tool, PensionTrack, to help manage behavior by understanding the goals of the client, by understanding who the client is and what his risk tolerance might be, and then by loading the PensionTrack and then testing it against what could happen in the market or what might happen in the market, and then getting a real assessment with some clarity of, can you tolerate this or not? Is this smart? Is this not? Is this something you want to do? And they understand it because they can see it. They can see it in hard numbers.
Exactly. And what's interesting to me about this process is what we haven't used the word investment policy once, okay? We're a wealth management firm. This is what we do. We manage wealth. All of this work, all of this clarity that we're trying to create eventually is going to end up, you got to have a plan, right? And the plan is an investment policy. And what is that policy saying that we're supposed to do? And that becomes a policy that is so specific to that one client that...
Built for that client.
And it's the agreement that we have between each other so that we understand the individuality of that client. And that drives everything else forward. From that point, it gets us as an investment advisor to behave better also.
Any final thoughts about behavioral economics, Tom?
No, I thought you behaved very well today, Tom, and I just want to point that out to the audience.
But he didn't say anything about you, Sam.
We don't have enough time for that one.
This has been a fascinating discussion, and I'm Tom Lyons for my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Georgie Jorgensen. I'd like to thank Tom Fee from Vector Wealth Management for being with us on this segment of today's BusinessRadio.com.
Thank you, I think.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.